You are about to hear an address by the President of the United States. Today, the chief executive flew from Washington, D.C. to Miami, Florida to speak before the opening session of the Golden Jubilee Convention of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, an organization of which Mr. Truman has been a member for 30 years. The president, who speaks from Dinner Key Auditorium in Miami, will be introduced by Lyle T. Beggs, National Commander-in-Chief of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Ladies and gentlemen, Commander Beggs.
Ladies and gentlemen, we who are gathered here to observe the Golden Jubilee Convention for the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States, I present the President of the United States.
Thank you very much. Mr. Commander-in-Chief, distinguished guests, fellow members of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, I am happy to be in Miami today to help celebrate the Golden Jubilee anniversary of this organization. I want to thank you for that gold card, this Golden Jubilee cap, this membership certificate here, called Member of the Scroll of Honor. I appreciate all those things. Now I'm particularly happy to have this Missouri mule. I'm proud to be a member of the oldest active veterans organization in the nation. For 50 years, the VFW has been serving not only the interests of the men who fought for our country in foreign lands, but also the interests of our whole nation. I've watched the splendid humanitarian work which our organization carries on. I have also been gratified by the record of the VFW in other fields, and particularly in the field of international policy. I recall the United Nations rally in 1942 at the 43rd National Encampment in Cincinnati, which 14 allied nations sent representatives. I remember the Victory Conference of 1945 at our Chicago encampment, where representatives from 21 allied nations met to discuss the value of cooperation in war and the importance of continuing international cooperation in time of peace. The VFW has continued this fine record, by its strong support of the North Atlantic Treaty, I am particularly pleased that you've asked me to be here, on the day the VFW is honoring distinguished representatives from other countries which have joined in the North Atlantic Treaty. The presence of veterans from most of the treaty countries meeting with our own veterans is symbolic of the spirit that binds together the three nations of the world. All the countries that signed the treaty have learned the tragic cost of war. All of us have learned how weakness invites aggression, how democratic countries, unless they stand together, can be taken over one by one. And now, all of us are determined that, by joint efforts and a common defense, we shall become strong enough to prevent another terrible conflict. 4 years ago, when the war ended, the world entered a new phase of human history. There were many who believed that the world would quickly return to its old ways. Many believed that the countries of the world would work their way peacefully and in cooperation back to conditions of stability and prosperity. And that is what we all prayed for. But the effects of this last war were too far-reaching to permit such an easy adjustment. The destruction had been too great to allow a quick recovery. The accumulated wealth of generations had been poured out and lost in the conflict. Conditions of world trade had been fundamentally altered. As a result of the upheaval, many peoples demanded new rights and new responsibilities. Men who had lived for centuries in economic or political servitude asked for independence and a fair share of the good things of life. The war against tyranny was sustained by belief in the four freedoms. Men refused to yield to dictatorship because they desired and believed they could secure conditions of material and spiritual freedom. When the war ended, they demanded to be treated as free men. They demanded a world in which they could attain security and liberty. This demand cannot be suppressed. This demand cannot be suppressed. It must not be frustrated. It presents a challenge to us and to the values of our civilization, which will require all our energies and wisdom to satisfy. One pretended answer to this demand of mankind is offered by organized communism. But that answer is a false one. Communism claims to satisfy the universe. But in fact, it lures men by false promises back to tyranny and slavery. And more people all over the world are learning that fact, some of them to their cost. The free nations of the world offer a different answer to the demand of mankind, for security and liberty. Voluntary association among free nations of our common problems. And combined, we're convinced that through these means, the world can achieve economic progress and at the same time maintain and expand democratic freedoms. We are convinced that our answer will prevail. The people of the United States have been meeting this challenge. In 4 short years, they've done more in the cause of world peace and world recovery, than any nation has ever before been called upon to do. We're not alone in this effort. Many nations which share our democratic values, and our traditions are working with us. Without these allies in the cause of peace, our task would be entirely hopeless. We can win a permanent peace striving toward the same objective. To achieve a better world, we must prevent international violence. Unless protection against war can be secured, all efforts for the advancement of mankind will fail. One of the most important aspects of our foreign policy, therefore, is our effort to establish international order. To this end, we have joined with other nations in creating a world organization, aggression, and establish a means of settling international disputes. The principles of the United Nations are still our goal. We have undertaken to defend and preserve them. We will keep that pledge. Shortly after the end of the war, however, it became apparent that the United Nations could not live up to all our hopes for it until all nations were united in a desire for peace. It became necessary, therefore, for the free countries to take action to defend the principles of that organization and to preserve it. By an overwhelming bipartisan vote, the Congress of vote, the Congress approved my recommendation early in 1947 that the United States help Greece and Turkey resist communist pressures. Our prompt action preserved the integrity of both those countries. By an equally overwhelming vote in 1948, the Congress approved our joint enterprise with 16 European nations to achieve economic recovery. The European Recovery Program has prevented general collapse of the world, resumed a course of economic progress. While we're working with our friends in Europe, we are also working with our friends and neighbors in this hemisphere. The Pact of Rio de Janeiro, signed in September 1947, binds the nations of in a defensive alliance. The United States and 11 other nations have now joined in the North Atlantic Treaty. Like the Rio Pact, this is a pledge of mutual assistance. By nations which are determined to protect their independence. It is based on the principle that an armed attack on one nation, is an attack on all. The next task is to back up this principle with military assistance to European nations and to certain other nations which are unable to build up their defenses without outside help. I recommended to the Congress that the United States supply three kinds of military assistance, to friendly democratic nations in need of our assistance. First, we should help them increase their own military production. Second, we should transfer to them some essential items of military equipment. Third, we should send some of our experts abroad, to help train and equip their military forces. Now, some people who do not understand, the state of the world very well, have tried to make the military assistance program seem a difficult and confused issue. On the contrary, it is very simple. The purpose of the military assistance program is to prevent aggression. Our European partners in the North Atlantic Treaty are not strong enough today. Since the end of the war, they are war-torn economies. We can strengthen them and ourselves by transferring some military means, joining with them in a common defense plan. The military assistance program is based on the same principle of self-help and mutual aid that is the cornerstone of the European Recovery Program and the North Atlantic Treaty. We are not arming ourselves and our friends to start a fight with anybody. We are building defenses so that we won't have to fight. In two instances, if we'd been ready, there would have been no war. Our aid would be limited to the material forces. These forces will constitute no threat to the independence of other nations. The democratic nations have no desire for aggression. They only want to be able to defend their homes. Most of our assistance under this program will go to Atlantic Treaty countries, but we will also help certain other nations whose security is important to world peace. We must continue our aid to Greece and Turkey. We should help Iran maintain its firm stand against Soviet pressure. And in the Far East, two young republics, the Philippines and Korea, need military assistance if they are to maintain their national security. If it were possible, we would prefer that these bulwarks against aggression be established by the United Nations. We hope the peace of the world will come someday, will someday be enforced. Someday be enforced by security forces under the control and direction of the United Nations. United Nations. We have been working for that. For that. But the Soviet Union has blocked every effort to establish an effective international police force and to free the world from the fear of aggression. For that reason, we have had to join other friendly nations in forming regional defense pacts. The United Nations Charter was wisely drawn to permit these regional defense pacts and other collective security arrangements, which are consistent with the great principles of that. The military assistance program will help the United Nations to operate more effectively by increasing the collective as well as the individual ability of free countries to resist aggression. The military assistance program and the European recovery program are part and parcel of the same policy. There is the closest relationship between economic recovery and military defense. On the one hand, economic recovery fear of military aggression is widespread. Such fear will prevent new investments from being made and new industries from being established. On the other hand, if protection against aggression is assured, economic recovery will move forward more rapidly. Sound economic recovery and adequate military defense must be carried. In balance. That is exactly what we propose to do. Great.